Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest this morning is retired professor John Cozy. He's a retired philosophy and logic professor. He's now blogging on social, political, and economic issues. He taught for 20 years. He was a writer for another 20 years. And his articles can all be found on jcozy, K-O-Z-Y, .com. Another site, johncozy.mindsay, M-I-N-D-S-A-Y, .com. And also on globalresearch.ca. So lots of places to find John's articles. In July, John wrote two important articles, one up on Global Research on the 4th of July, and he calls it, "Whose Country Is It Anyway? A Political Economic Oligarchy Has Taken Over the United States of America." We sure want to talk about that. That is a very, very important topic. And he has another one that is on Global Research, the 17th of July, and he titles it, "Ignorance in America." Oh, that's something that's on my mind all the time. It haunts me. And I think it's such a core factor that is letting the criminals who run this country get away with what they do. People simply don't know what the devil's going on. And even worse than that, there's such indifference. It really is appalling. But we want to talk about these. And John writes about them. We discuss them one way or another in this program. So, John, I welcome you back to the program. It's great having you back on again.
Well, good morning.
Shall we go to the first one, the one that you wrote early about a political economic oligarchy taking over the country?
Any way you wish.
Oh, I think that was the early one. I think that's a big one to start on. I think that's been the case pretty much going way, way back. But it just gets worse. As these monsters get bigger and stronger, then the problem gets greater and greater. I think you'd agree on that, John.
Yeah, I don't, you know, nobody knows when it began, of course, but somehow or other the Congress of the United States forgot to read the preamble of the Constitution. And, you know, that lays out the purposes for which the United States of America was created and the Constitution was written. And what they've done instead is create a body of law that really favors business first and puts people last, which I think contradicts the goals of the Constitution as they were stated in the preamble. And the interesting thing is you can't get anybody to talk about it. I have a long-standing acquaintance who's a constitutional lawyer, law professor, and even served as the Solicitor General of the United States for a while. And I sent him the article before I published it and asked him for his comments. Now, he usually responds to me. We've, you know, corresponded quite a bit over the years. But he failed to reply. Wouldn't say a word. So, you know, that situation in America, you can't get the powers to be to listen. They won't engage in intellectual debate. And the system keeps getting worse and worse.
Well, there's no question about that. I think the problem does have very deep roots. We didn't have big corporations way back when the country was founded. But, I hear the band in the background, John.
Okay.
Oh, we need to take a break and we'll come back. But, as the country grew over the many generations, the situation just got worse and worse. And, of course, in recent decades, it really is horrendous, but we can get into it. I agree with you on the Constitution, but I'll mention a few problems with the Constitution when we get back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hour on with John Cozy, talking about an oligarchy that's taken over the country. John, there's no question, and you quote from the preamble of the Constitution. That language is pretty clear. You list 6 points, And boy, I mean, any grade school kid could read that stuff and understand what it means more or less. The problem is that the Constitution has a lot of wiggle room in it too. And the worst problem is, as you know, is the people who govern us simply do what they want to do, and they don't care what the Constitution says.
Well, that appears to be the case. Yeah, how the judiciary got corrupted is an interesting question for me. I don't quite understand that because they're not in the big money loop. But nevertheless, it's happened, and I don't quite understand it.
Oh, it has happened, and you look at the makeup of the court now, so that even the current justice to be being vetted, who I think absolutely will be improved to Sotomayor, she may be a moderate compared to the others. But she certainly isn't a stellar candidate, a stellar jurist to sit on the high court. There isn't a single justice on that court that should be anywhere near that has the qualifications to really be a distinguished jurist. And the ones who really have those credentials absolutely don't get picked. We had some in the past, the Brennans, the black justice, not Thomas, what's his name? You know the one I mean, under
yeah,
Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. I mean, I know him so well and remember him so well. I'm embarrassed. But listen to who I mean, the distinguished black justice who really believed in constitutional law, civil rights, human rights, the kind of things that never get considered now. The court basically represents big business today. John, you know that.
Yeah, well, the whole government represents big business today.
Oh,
that's
of course.
The unfortunate thing about it. Politics I read an article in the local paper the other day written by a college student about liberal professors, and I wrote him just a personal message back, and I said, you don't understand what the world is like. I pointed out that there are more than 100 political parties in Italy, but only two in the United States. So, you know, it implies somehow or other that the range of political opinion in America is less versatile than it is in Italy, which is nonsense. So, which means that if you're a Republican or a Democrat today, it says nothing whatsoever about your political views. And unfortunately, one of the bad things about American politics has got too many lawyers in it. Lawyers are not terribly well-educated people. Quite often in undergraduate school, they study political sciences, which is basically a crip course. Then they go on to law school and learn what the law says, not what it ought to be. And then they go on to positions in government and justice, and the system just gets ground down to a machine. And it's an unfortunate thing, but it's not easy to change, and I don't know how one would go about changing it.
Oh, it can only be changed by people at the grassroots figuring out what's going on and deciding that the government is really ill-serving us, and unless people get very, very activist to start doing things in their own self-interest, then nothing will change. Thurgood Marshall was the justice
Marshall.
I was
yeah,
thinking
right.
of. My apologies, Thurgood. He's not with us anymore. He hung on as long as he could. There are no Thurgood Marshalls on the court. There are no Brennans on the court. And as you say, the government is infested with them. Well, it's so disturbing, John, that you've got some members of Congress who, when they don't have power, and I'm thinking of people like a Henry Waxman, they come down on the right side of important issues, and as soon as they take over the majority interest in Congress, and a guy like Waxman gets a committee chairmanship, he does a complete about-face, and he forgets all the things that he stood for in past administrations under Republican leadership, and he goes the exact opposite way.
Our president seems to have done the same thing.
Oh, without any question. But he didn't fool me for a minute going back to the campaign. I wrote about him so often. I've written enough articles about Obama to at least fill one book. And I followed him during the campaign, and I quoted him, and I went through his Senate voting record. And I said, now hold on. he is going to be a supreme disappointment if he gets elected. And I honest to goodness thought he was the worst possible choice because he will bamboozle the public to think he's different, but he's not. Whereas McCain, people knew what McCain was, so they would probably hate him going out of the box, even if by some miracle he was elected. Well, I think he was picked to lose, not win. And Obama was picked to be what I call a Manchurian candidate. Nobody really knows for a while just what kind of a guy he is and what he represents. But they're slowly figuring it out, and they will entirely before too very long.
Yeah, I think so. A golden tongue doesn't succeed in convincing people when experience refutes what's being said.
Well, it really is a shame. I've said a number of times in this program, I live in Chicago, John, and I do remember election night. This city erupted like Times Square on New Year's Eve. And again, I shook my head saying, I just can't believe it. The offices closed early so people could go to the big rally. And then once it was officially announced, the official announcement hadn't come out until the evening at some time, but there was a big rally in what's called Grand Park in Chicago. Big area. Was it televised?
Oh, yes.
Well, I didn't watch, and I honestly don't know, but I read about it the next morning, and I dumped it in an article that I was writing. I added a section on it, and again, I just shook my head and said, oh, brother. Well, you know, people loved Adolf Hitler until he started losing battles. So people love Obama thinking he's going to bring a completely different situation from George Bush, and I literally call him worse than Bush.
Well, it's certainly possible. Yeah, I was thinking the other day that Washington can be likened to an asylum for addicts, just like addicts, when what they're taking doesn't give them the kick they want, they just take more of it. So that the change we're getting is just more of the same.
I love the Gore Vidal quote about our political system. And he just says that we have a one-party system with two wings, and he calls it either the money party or the property party. I don't see a dime's worth of difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, more than 20 years ago, I wrote a little piece, and I've lost it somewhere along the way, but I argued then that there was no essential difference between the two political parties. And when we had a reactionary party and we had a conservative party, we had nothing that the rest of the world would call a liberal party or even a moderate party.
And again, I think it gets worse. You look at the policies that the Obama folks are following. It's shocking. Their economic policies, I think, have been so destructive. It would make a bad Hollywood script, John, if somebody turned in a script that the federal treasury would be looted by $12 to $14 trillion to hand over to criminal bankers responsible for the economic crisis that we're in, and small amounts are being used for real stimulus to turn this economy around, and people who are really suffering job losses, home losses, savings losses. So little is being done for them. I'm on Social Security. They sent me $250. Well, I guess I'm not.
Yours. I haven't gotten mine yet.
I got mine. I found out about it in June, and I think it was on my May bank statement, but I actually forgot about it. $250. Well, you know, that will stop. Well, I'm not in debt. And my mortgage is paid off. So I don't have a problem that a lot of other people have. But there are a lot of poor elderly people, and every little bit will help. But if they're in trouble, that $250 isn't going to go very far. But
no,
the bankers get all they want.
Yeah. And you know, the contradiction in the Congress is just astounding, and I don't know why the American people don't recognize it. I mean, anytime business needs something, the money is there. Anytime they want to go to war, the money is there. Anytime they want to build a new weapon, the money is there. But anytime somebody proposes a benefit for the people who are really needy, the money can't be found. It's a strange thing.
It really is strange, and I think your second article, we can kind of mix and match a little bit, John. We have a break coming up shortly, but your other article, Ignorance in America, I think this is key because people, both from the way the educational system is structured and the way people, beyond their schooling years, the way they get their information, we have a very dumbed-down country. People simply don't know what they need to know to be good citizens and to realize what serves them well and what ill serves them. So I love the old quote, the old media critic Neil Postman's quote, going back years, where he talked about people in this country being the most over-entertained, under-informed people in the world, and I think that really cuts to the heart of our problems.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah.
I guess it starts in the educational system, and it really has gotten through the years. It's gotten to be an abomination. But even way back, John, I went to a couple of pretty good schools myself, and the only thing I'm really grateful to them for is they taught me how to learn, but they certainly didn't teach me the stuff that I later learned on my own.
Well, I think that's the experience that every scholar has.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to NewsHour. I'm with John Cozy. John, one thing in your Ignorance in America article that really struck me, you mentioned the importance of books, and they're absolutely a vital for me. And I call my collection, it's a little smaller than yours, I call it my treasure. And important books that teach me things. And when I discover an author that I like, I'd want to read more books by that author. And they're the ones that really gave me my education. And people don't read this stuff. They don't read books at all. And maybe the few they do, it might be a cheap dime novel or a piece of rubbish on the New York Times bestseller list. The kind that you and I know are important don't end up on that list. But this is the way we learn. But you have to make a little effort.
Oh, no, learning is a big effort, not a little effort.
Indeed.
People need to read the allegory of the cave in Plato's Republic to find out how tough learning is.
And it never stops. It never stops. What every time I learn something, I really want to go on and learn more. And I tell people again, I'm not a scholar. I research to do my writing, and I say very honestly, every time I write something, I learn something new. And it just excites me. It's like a bit of adrenaline that excites me to want to know more about that topic, about other topics. And then I'll things are happening, events are happening, and I want to look into it, and I want to get information about it, and then I want to pass it on to other people if I think it's important. So this drives me, and I guess that makes me different. Most people my age just want to go fishing or something, but that doesn't have any interest for me at all.
Yeah, same here.
Same for you.
Yeah.
But the reason that we're in such trouble in the country is because people know so little. They don't take the trouble to find important things out. There's a terrible amount of indifference about things. People worry more about who's going to win the local ball game or something or other. And they don't worry about things that if we don't figure out a way to change, then their own future and the future of their kids simply won't be so wonderful. Well,
yeah, well, you know, the people in America have been put in a bad position, and that's even true of educators. It's not the educational system in America that's bad, although it is. What's bad is the attitude that produces that educational system, and that attitude, of course, comes from the power elite in America. It's easier to control ignorant people than it is to control educated people, and the power elite knows that. And so what do? They fill people's minds with baseball games, football games, you know, reality television, dating, all sorts of stuff, but nothing of any substance. And of course, if you don't know that there are issues of substance out there, you can't think about them. So it's deliberate policy. I don't have any doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely. One of the lines I like is that our educational system, all the way through to the highest level, above all, is designed to make us good citizens, not to make us knowledgeable about the stuff that is on your mind and on my mind all the time, John.
Yeah, I would object to one word in your sentence. Good. Compliant is the word that I would use.
Okay, compliant citizens. Like mushrooms. Well-watered and in the dark.
Yeah, okay.
That's the way they want to keep the population, except the elite folks at the top, and they're the ones who run things, whether in government, in business,
The interesting thing is that they've tricked themselves. They're just as ignorant. If they weren't as ignorant, they wouldn't realize that the policies they're pursuing are self-contradictory and self-destructive in the long run.
But they don't worry about it, John. They say, well, even the ones who understand this, they say, well, you know, that's the problem for somebody who takes my place after I retire or I pass on. So they kick the can down the road. Let somebody else worry about it.
Yeah, that's going to be their grandchild or great-grandchild. They don't realize that.
Well, it's true. And I believe, as some others who I've read, who believe that for a good amount of time now, maybe going back to the 1970s, this country has been in a state of decline. And I firmly believe that there's no question we're an empire. And I firmly believe that that our fate will be no different than every other empire in world history. We will meet our Waterloo somewhere down the road. And I think it's been accelerated during the Bush years and now the first 6 months of Barack Obama.
Yeah, again, it's a matter of ignorance in the upper class. They haven't read their history. I mean, empires are extremely expensive to maintain, especially if you're going to maintain them using military might. And the sooner or later, the treasury runs dry.
Well, that's right. And then we have all these bases circling the world. We spend just unbelievable amounts of money on the military, more than the rest of the world combined. And there are black budgets that nobody knows what's in them, but there are countless more billions that are not publicly known. And you've got all these intelligence agencies, 16 of them, CIA being only one, and they have black budgets, so nobody knows how many billions they're spending. You can't keep doing this forever. Sooner or later, you get into trouble and the whole house of cards comes down.
Well, after the commercial.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with John Cozy. John, if I can quote you in your Ignorance in America article, just read a little bit of it. You mentioned very strongly that this ignorance is pervasive throughout the country, rich and poor alike, and it affects the rich as well as the poor, the powerful and the powerless, the famous as well as the obscure. And you say how anyone can believe that America can continue to prosper in this state of ignorant dependency. My words, it's pretty damn stupid. And you mentioned the British Empire, the last noted one. It was in serious decline by World War I, and it couldn't really defend itself properly then. It couldn't do it again in World War II. And the great British Empire just basically ended. It came to an end, just like other ones.
Oh, yeah.
So those who don't remember their history are doomed to suffer the same fate. A twist on the quote.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. The United States of America is on the verge of collapse. Now, whether it's going to happen, you know, in a year or 5 years or 10 years, I don't know. But you can't keep spending money you don't have. You can't keep trying to bribe foreign countries into supporting American policies. You can't get control of natural resources through the barrel of a gun. That costs far more than paying a decent price for the natural resources would. It's a stupid move, and there's one sentence in that article. I think it's in that article where I say, you know, we import our products. We've been importing our brains, and now we're even importing our own money by borrowing, you know, our money from China. I mean, how absurd can things be when you have to import your own money?
And we've been doing it. This is what Nixon began in 1971.
And he's the guy that destroyed Bretton Woods treaty too.
Exactly. Yeah. We went off the gold standard. We were spending recklessly, guns and butter. Too much guns. We never spent enough on butter.
No.
Helping people. That was the so-called war on poverty. Johnson's war on poverty. Call it a skirmish on poverty. It certainly wasn't a war. But the Vietnam spending really brought us an awful lot of economic distress. And I think that was nothing compared to now. Because I don't think to use the printing press analogy, I don't think they can roll those printing presses fast enough, long enough, round the clock, day after day, to print all the money they're spending. It's beyond comprehension. I can't understand these numbers. So many trillions of dollars, and this is what we hear about. I wonder how much more there is that we never get to hear about.
And that's why the Fed doesn't want to be audited.
My feeling is, John, I'd love to see the Fed audited, but to me that's a sideshow. I would like to see the Fed shut down.
It ought to be shut down, but auditing would be the first step to that, I think.
That would be the first step.
The interesting thing, I don't know whether you saw Ron Paul's questioning I don't remember who it was the other day, but he pointed out that in 1913, when the Fed was established, if you take a dollar as equivalent to one then, the dollar today is worth 4 cents.
I didn't see that, but that's right. I think I used a nickel.
And he was questioning the official about the Fed's mandate to control inflation, and he pointed out that if the dollar today is only worth 4 cents since the Fed was created, how in the heaven's name can you claim you've been controlling inflation?
They don't want to control inflation.
Of course not. That's the way out of the bad debt.
Oh, sure. You pay it off with cheaper dollars. And of course, it gives companies a chance to raise prices. If we had price stability, they could never raise prices, bring in more revenue. And they want us to pay for that. They want ordinary people to pay for that.
No, they don't want ordinary people to pay for it. They make ordinary people pay for it.
Oh, they force us. But they're very clever. They're very clever. They do it, and we don't realize that we're being fleeced.
Well, no, we don't. And nobody who can wants to tell us. That's the interesting thing.
Indeed. And I even wonder. You say maybe a lot of people who really should know actually don't know. I wonder how many people in power really don't understand a lot of this stuff. They get these bills, John, alone. Obama's health care bill, well, there are several versions, and it's a work in progress. It's an atrocity in progress. But I forget if it's either the House or the Senate bill. It runs over 1,000 pages.
I'm thinking about writing an article about that. You know, there's a... there's a maxim that scientists use called Occam's razor. I don't know whether you're familiar with that.
No, I'm not.
But it's a maxim that says the simplest explanation is always the best. And I thought to myself, if you want to create a program that is going to fail, just make it complicated. And of course, that's what the Congress does over and over and over again. And that's what Obama has done with the health care reform. He's made it so complicated that everybody in the country has a question about this or that. Whereas if he had made it very simple, all those questions wouldn't have been able to have been asked. The debate would have centered on something essential. So, you know, I'm thinking about writing this article saying the government needs a close shave.
Well, I will. Anything you write, John, I look forward to very, very eagerly. And thankfully, Michelle Chosudovsky posts them on Global Research. And your articles are always an eye-opener. I learn from you, absolutely. And I recommend listeners, I certainly recommend they go to globalresearch.ca. And there's so many good articles, and yours stand out so strongly, John. And these two, that when I read your article on oligarchy taking over the country, and just like I did before when I had you on earlier, I said, oh, God, I've got to get John on to talk about this because this is important stuff. And this is the way we pass information to people, except I don't reach millions of people through this program. If we were on primetime TV, John, we could really shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, but I don't think the chances of that are very good.
And if they made a mistake and put us on, well, my goodness. If anybody wanted to keep us on, I suspect that person would become a very quick casualty. And maybe you and I as well.
Yeah, I suspect so. It's amazing, though, the broad scope of readers that Global Research has. For instance, you know, I publish these articles and I get comments. I have got comments from countries: Estonia, China, India, Venezuela, all over the world. So Global Research gets quite a good readership. It's very interesting.
Oh, indeed, and it's published in some other languages as well. I forget how many, but it is published, I think, in maybe two or more other languages. So it'll pick up non-English readers, and it's vital information. And even if you go through some and skim them, You can find out stuff that, including a lot of stuff you won't find on other websites, which is so valuable about it.
Yeah.
And it covers a great diversity of topics, important topics. So name your interest. Certainly anything that touches our lives most directly, like our health, our jobs, stuff like that. I mean, people should be concerned about that. If we're not concerned about it, well, how can we expect anybody else to be concerned for us?
Yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, there are too many people in the country who either don't or can't read. So,
I think a combination of both.
I
wrote an article, oh, it must be over a year ago now, on public education in the country, and that literally is a plot in this country that has been going on for a while and accelerated under George Bush to destroy public education and hand it over to corporate profiteers. Which is absolutely insane. Corporations are in business to make a profit, of course, John. If they're not going to hire high-priced teachers, they're not going to get in all the bells and whistles to teach kids right. And, of course, we don't want to teach the majority of kids. So you put them in corporate classrooms, and you keep them dumbed down, and you get through kids through school as far as they want to go. And they come out and they're illiterate. They don't know math. They can't read right. They have no computer skills. They're the perfect kind of citizens that we want. And this is the educational system in the country.
And as I said before, it's the result of an attitude that Americans have about learning. It's not important to the nation as a whole. Learning is a sideline that a few people get into.
to a large degree, it was different when I was a kid growing up in the 1940s and 50s. Not as good as it should have been, but I lived in a very modest neighborhood, a mixed neighborhood, call it lower middle class. And I went to a high school that the family sent their kids to, a great school, of course, too. It was serious stuff there. I remember wonderful teachers that I had, and there was great decorum in the classroom, and there was seriousness. You had homework, you had to do it. I remember I had a French teacher who was a very tiny woman who absolutely terrified everybody in the classroom. Everybody got called on, and any mistake you made, you practically had your knuckles wrapped. So you either were prepared or you were prepared to get your knuckles wrapped. Well, I don't know what they do in classrooms now. I mean, kids bring knives to school, or I don't know what they do. I mean, there can be a lot of disruption in these classrooms in a lot of schools. I don't think in the upper class areas, where their parents want their kids prepared for college, so they either go to a private school or to some of the better schools in the affluent suburbs. But the inner city schools in Chicago are an absolute abomination, and they have been for many years.
Well, look, what's going on in the schools is just a microcosm of what's going on in society. Society is violent, so the schools are violent. Society is ignorant, so the schools are ignorant. You can't have an institution in a society that doesn't reflect the society's values. And the society's values at the moment are get what you can for yourself. Number one, or look out for number one first. Forget about the rest of the world and your neighbor, and then that carries over into the schools. Kids go into school with those attitudes. So do teachers, I guess.
Well, I think so. And of course, it's also a society that wants an elite segment at the top to run things, and the rest of the population should be docile.
I don't know that it's a society that does that. Certainly the elite at the top wants to run things, and they've made the society like it is. And the difficulty is that it's been going on for so long. How one changes it becomes a real conundrum. It's a Gordian knot that can't even be cut, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid you're right, John. And it really looks we're on track that we will just reach a bad ending at some point or other. But what's so scary is, unlike past empires, we have weapons that were inconceivable to them, and if we ever were threatened, or if we thought we might be threatened, somebody might, even by mistake, do something very reckless that could cause, a world catastrophe that we don't even want to think about. So
I think that's what. The American military is relying on. They have this notion that superior weapons win wars, but they don't. They never have. Germany had superior weapons in World War II for most of the duration of that war, and they lost. We had superior weapons in both Korea and in Vietnam, and Korea turned out to be a stalemate, and we got the pants beat off us in Vietnam, although nobody wants to admit that. And the same thing is happening over in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now even in Pakistan. You have a couple million-dollar airplane that fires one rocket to kill one man. You can't afford to do that. I mean, you can't win a war that way. Killing one man won't stop the enemy.
Oh, absolutely. Determined guerrillas who want to free their country from an occupier or an oppressor, they could be very determined. In the history of Iraq and Afghanistan, these people are very determined. They do not treat occupiers very well.
When I wrote that article, Ignorance in America, people questioned why I had that beginning paragraph about Christiane Annemann-Poor's series. But what I was trying to point out is that she told us, you know, what, in a sense, what caused the beginning of the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic Jihad. But she never told us why that book was so influential. She never told us anything about the book. And it, unless we understand that, we're never going to be able to defeat those people.
We never will defeat those people. And of course, the Christiane Annemann-Poors of the world, even if they understood this stuff, and I don't think they do, John, but even if they did, they never would pass on the explanation that you would do. So they give a very distorted view of things, or a very superficial view, and they have no understanding. But you turn it around. You turn it around from our point of view. So one of our soldiers gets captured by somebody in Afghanistan, and it's feature stories on the news. One of our guys. Well, this is appalling. What about the thousands of their guys that we have locked up in torture prisons? What about the millions that were displaced or killed?
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of contradiction, which makes us lose the propaganda war. I hear the band playing. So
the band is playing
until it's over.
Then we have one final segment. I'll give it all to you, John.
No, that's all right.
We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour on with John Cozy. Oh, John, I say it often. I do love that last commercial. That one is a winner, absolutely. Can I quote you one more time, and then
sure,
you can comment and continue again from your Economic Oligarchy article? You talk about at the end of the article that America needs a new birth of freedom. It needs a government for the people. It needs a government that puts people first, but it won't get one unless Americans come to realize just how immoral and vicious our economic system is, and of course also unsustainable.
Well, the American government has somehow or other devolved back into the 16th and 17th century. When the European nation states were developing, the monarchs were in control, and the countries actually existed for the benefit of the royal families and monarchs and the aristocracy that they were aligned to. Over the next couple of centuries, some countries have made some progress toward adapting their governments so that they're more concerned with the welfare of people rather than, you know, of some elite class somewhere or other. But the United States has gone in the opposite direction. I mean, having begun as a social compact nation where people made the decision to ratify the Constitution through their state representatives or colonial representatives, we have gone further and further away from a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, to a government for an aristocratic class, where we are, in a sense, some kind of strange monarchy that the nation and its people exist for. And it happened over a long period of time. It happened quietly, without people being aware of it. But I think I wrote an article, maybe even on Global Research, that America is leading the world headlong into the 18th century or 17th century or something like that. And that's exactly what's happening. I mean, if we're leading the free world, we're leading it backwards. And I cannot help but believe that people in the rest of the world don't realize that. And I ask myself, well, how is it then that they continue to at least pay lip service to our leadership? And I think that it's simply bribery. I mean, we have told all of these countries that, you know, we will provide your military umbrella. So they've all cut their own military budgets. They can't defend themselves. They expect us to defend them. That's wonderful, you know. So they're not allowing us to be the leader. They're allowing us to be the protector. And when that fails, when we can't do that anymore, I think that the whole thing will collapse.
I think there are also some signs of some cracks in our supremacy, where countries like China and I don't see it yet in the European, Western European countries, maybe a little bit, but really not that much. But countries that see that our policies are hurting them, and they don't want to go down with us, so they want to diverge just a little bit. So they do it very slowly, incrementally. Oh, we're out of time, John. We're out of time. I'd love to keep this going. Will you please write another article or two or three?
And then
I'll get you back on the program, and we'll talk about those, because all your articles need to be discussed over the year, and it's a great privilege for me to have you come on.
Well, thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much, John, and please come back tomorrow. Another top guest, more top discussion. Join us then.
Bye-bye.
Bye, John.